Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate 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 Vasudevaya.
All righty. So should we talk about Prabhupada, or should we talk about Krishna in Vrindavan? Put your hand up if you would prefer about Prabhupada. Okay. Put your hand up if you prefer Krishna in Vrindavan. Yes, I know. And put your hand up if you don't mind. Okay. Well, let me tell you a story about Krishna in Vrindavan, which I don't know if you know or not. In the Himalayas, actually, in the Himalayas, there's a place called Badrinath. Anyone been to Badrinath? Lovely. Your husband's not here.
You put glasses on
now. Oh, I see. Okay, yeah, you came with us, right?
Yes.
We went to Badrinath. Wow. That is quite something. Everyone should go at least one time in their lives to Badrinath and to the Himalayas. Yeah, it's really amazing and very Krishna conscious. So Badrinath. But in Vrindavan, there is a Badrinath also. Some of you may have been with us to Badrinath in Vrindavan, or the Vrajmandal area, the greater area. You know, it was just Shivaratri, of course, and on Sunday we extended it. We also told some Lord Shiva pastimes and things. So I was thinking what we could do here. Earlier today, and I thought we could tell you one story about Lord Shiva and Krishna and Badrinath in Vrindavan. You've been Badrinath in Vrindavan? With me?
Yes.
Oh, you did? Okay. We climbed?
Yes.
A bit? Yeah, we climbed. So there's a mountainous area, or hilly come mountainous. It's kind of like, I mean, it's not quite like the Himalayas exactly, but, you know, it's something. By Vrindavan standards, it is the most mountainous part. And there is a Badrinath there, and there is a Kedarnath there, because all the sacred, main sacred places of India, they are in Vrindavan also. The Ganges is there, for example. It's in Vrindavan. And Badrinath is also there. And Kedarnath is also there. So Lord Shiva and Parvati, they were living in Badrinath, in Vraja, Vrajmandala, this, let us say, mountainous area. And it's very nice. It's really, it is in scenic terms the most beautiful part of Vrindavan, by far, even, you could say, or at least it is the most beautiful. So they had a house And they would go out and gather fruits and things. And in this way they maintained themselves and they were doing nicely. One day they were moving around through the mountains, the passes and things. And what should they see but a little boy? How old are you?
Five.
What's your name?
Arjuna.
Wow. You look like Arjuna. Powerful. So there's this little boy. He was maybe same age or maybe like four. Maybe slightly younger. Just there in the forest. And that Badrina, there is no civilization for quite some kilometers. So what is this little boy doing on his own, abandoned in the forest, just way out from anywhere? And this little boy was crying. You don't cry, do you, Arjuna? You're a Kshatriya. Kshatriyas don't cry. Anyway, this little boy was crying and really like quite disturbed. So Parvati, with the soft heart of a lady, she immediately became very concerned and told Moshira, oh, we must take this child, look after this child. Poor little child. And Lord Shiva, he said, Wait a minute. What is a child doing on his own out here? You know, something is very strange. Something is wrong. And Parvati said, oh, you know, you've got no sympathy. They went down and she picked up the little boy and she's sort of petting the little boy and hugging him and he's crying. And she asked, where's your mother? And the little boy said, I don't know. She left me here some time ago and she just disappeared. And Parvati was, oh, you poor little thing. And Lord Shiva was, something's wrong here. What mother abandons their child way out, hours, walking hours from the nearest house? Something's wrong here. There's something sort of tricky going on here. But Parvati said, oh, you're just a hard-hearted man. You got no sympathy. And Shiva said, well, I don't know, but it just seems like it must be like that. So they took him home and laid him down on a bed in their house. And then they went out to collect some fruits and roots and veggies, whatever, something to eat. And they came back after a while, and the door was locked from the inside. So they knocked on the door, and little face came to the window. The window's closed also. Little face came to the window. And they said, open the door, open the door. And little boy went, no, no. And they said, come on, you must open the door. You have to open the door. No, no. Listen, this is our house. You must open the door. It is my house now. You go find another place. He wouldn't let them in. Then they noticed in his hair a peacock feather. Take a wild guess who it was. And the afternoon, it was the afternoon already, and he wouldn't let them in. And then the evening started to come, and he wouldn't let them in. And he told them, no, you go, there's another place called Kedana. You go stay there. So they had no choice. Otherwise they just stuck overnight outside. So they walked. In the evening they walked all the way to Kedana, and they took up residence there. So like this, Krishna stole Badrina from Lord Shiva and Parvati because it's nicer. It's nicer. Kedana is nice too. And some of you, I think, have been with us to Kedana. You were there with us. It's also a really nice place, but not as scenic as Badrina. So there you go. You got to watch out for Krishna. Prabhupada, I was just reading. Prabhupada, what happened now? Let's just see. A devotee approached Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, I can trust you. I can surrender to you. But I can't trust your representatives like the Namahata leader. I can't trust these people. I can't surrender to them because I'm afraid they'll cheat me. And Prabhupada replied, don't surrender to me either. I may cheat you too. Surrender to Krishna. It's a true story. Yeah. So I'm going to tell you a few stories of Prabhupada, and maybe we'll throw in something about Vrindavan, let's see. Here's an interesting little story. Sure. It's a bit of a heavy story, actually. One devotee, his name was Jai Gopal, in America, in the very early days, he was killed in a car accident. And he was a married man, young fellow, and his young wife was just distraught. And Prabhupada happened to be around somewhere not far away. She went and had a meeting with Prabhupada. And Prabhupada told her, your husband Jai Gopal has gone back to Godhead. And later on, you will join him also. And she felt kind of pacified and more, somewhat more satisfied with that. However, when she walked out of the room, one other devotee said, who had been there, when Prabhupada said that, he said to her, oh, Prabhupada said that just to encourage you because you're very upset. But it's not like that. Your husband, he wasn't a very special devotee. So Prabhupada just said it, which upset her again. A few days later, one devotee was giving a class and said, in the same place, that actually it was a devotee named Dhanavir, who has been to South Africa back in the 80s, and if any of you remember him, American, very nice devotee. So Dhanavir was giving class, and Dhanavir said, you know, Prabhupada told us yesterday that Jai Gopal was not ready to go back to Godhead, but Krishna made an exception and took him back anyway. Isn't that interesting? So you never know. Therefore, we all got to hang in there. Sometimes there'll be challenges. Sometimes there may even be, challenge upon challenge. Sort of like crazy challenge type situation. But we should always hang in there. And stick at the lotus feet of Krishna. And if we do like that, that sort of, it can be called stickability. Stickability, they use that term sometimes. Means you don't give in quickly. You don't give up quickly. Yeah. Stickability, if you've got that sort of stickability, then, as Prabhupada said in regard to Jai Gopal, you might not really be qualified to go back to Godhead in very sort of, technical terms, but Krishna may make an exception. Yeah. And I think for some of us, that's what we need. We need some special mercy. Yeah. Here's another one. Listen to this. This is interesting. This one devotee, his name is Satswarup. You've probably heard of him. He's quite a famous devotee for many, many years. One of the original devotees. Although he's not public much nowadays. But he's still there. Still around. He had a dream. In the dream, devotees, would you believe, he died. That's quite a dream. In the dream, he died, and he went back to Godhead. Or, to the entrance, he went to the entrance of Goloka Vrindavan, because there are gates there. And there are guards. So he came to the gate and someone stopped him. A guard stopped him and said, "Who are you? What's your name?" And Satswarup said, "Satswarup." And the fellow said, "Okay, let me check my list of names." And he said, "Listen, we got so many Satswarups. We just got pages of Satswarups. Which Satswarup are you?" And Satswarup said, "I am the Satswarup who is a disciple of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada." And the guard said, "Oh, you're that Satswarup. Come in. Come in." And he was welcomed. So, Prabhupada has a black notebook. Pocket notebook sort of thing. And a black pen. Big. Yes. And he knows he's here tonight. Now there's his picture back there. There's his picture here also. What, there's his picture. Yeah, there's probably a few others here and there. So Prabhupada's here. When Prabhupada first went from New York to San Francisco, first time leaving New York, the devotees, New York devotees, said, "But how will we carry on without you?" And Prabhupada said, "Put my picture on my seat." His Vyasa said, "Put my picture on my seat and you will feel my presence." Yeah. Which means, because he is present, it's not just some sort of mental thing, you know, like a photo, just a photo of an ordinary person. It looks, it reminds you of the person, but the person's not there. So anyway, yes. So Prabhupada is here. Prabhupada's with us. Prabhupada's watching us. And if you do nicely in your Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada will write your name down in his little black book. I'm serious. He really will. And if you do, so that's good. You're off to a pretty good start. And then if you really try your best and you carry on and you're consistent like that, Prabhupada will put a gold star by your name in his little black book. Yeah. And you get a couple of gold stars, and before you know it, you go back to Godhead. Yeah. So, yeah. It's not in Krishna consciousness. It's often not what you know, but who you know. People, you know, if you say something like that, many people think that this is a corruption, right? Some bribery or nepotism is going on. Someone becomes the president, and before you know, all the ministers in the cabinet are either his wife or his brothers and sisters, this sort of deal. But no, this is different. It really is a fact. It's not so much what you know, but it's who you know. You've got to be well connected in Krishna consciousness. And after all, that's what initiation means, in a sense. In an important sense. It means other things too. But it means we become more solidly connected with Prabhupada and through him with the disciplic succession, through someone who knows him. Yeah. Not just someone who's got sort of like technical knowledge. So yeah, that was the dream. Oh, the satsarup of Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Oh, come in. Yeah. Right. Okay. Here's another little story. Listen to this. One devotee came to visit Prabhupada because, in America, because they had, in Los Angeles, had a special Sunday program. You know, like a day before or a couple of days before. Really special program. Some professional classical dancers came from India. In those days, it was pretty rare. And these professional dancers, they were really expert. And the crowd, well, they invited people, and there was a whole lot of people there. And the crowd was so impressed with the dancing. It was just a sort of a smash hit sort of program. And this devotee came with photographs to show Prabhupada. Look at this program we had. So Prabhupada's looking at the photos, and there are the dancers. If you can imagine, this is the temple room. So there's the crowd where you're sitting, and there's the altar with the deities, and the dancers are dancing like just here next to me with their backs to the deities. And the devotee's telling Prabhupada, look at this, the dancing. And the people were so impressed. They couldn't believe it. It was the most wonderful program. And Prabhupada said, first thing, the dancers have their backs to the deities. And the devotees said, yes, yes, well, there wasn't much we could do, but it was a wonderful program. It was a great program. It was just fantastic. The people loved it. And Prabhupada said, but the dancers have their backs to the deities. And the devotee understood Prabhupada had a problem with that. And the devotee said, well, we didn't know what to do. So we asked the GBC, the local GBC. We asked the GBC, Jaya Tirtha, is it alright if they dance with their backs to the deities? And Jaya Tirtha said, it is alright. And Prabhupada said, oh, I see. In Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami says, you must never turn your backs to the deities. Sanatana Goswami says, you must never turn your back to the deities. But Jaya Tirtha says, it is all right. And Prabhupada said, he has become big, big authority. And Prabhupada said, that is the problem in ISKCON. Too many big, big authorities. Well, just in that regard, I can mention another little thing. It's interesting. Prabhupada once was being driven in New York to the New York Ratha Yatra, annual big Ratha Yatra, down Fifth Avenue. It's just one of the main streets in the world. On a Saturday morning, it's a big program. So Prabhupada's being driven by someone, and Prabhupada asked the devotee, so who is here? Who is here? Meaning the senior devotees. And the devotee said, oh yes, this Swami and that Swami and this GBC and that GBC and this Maharaj and that Maharaj. And the devotee said, all the big devotees. And Prabhupada said, I am the only big devotee. Which was very true. You know, for some years Prabhupada traveled with Radha Krishna deities. They are, I think they're on the altar in Mayapur now. If not, they're in the altar in New York. But just small, you know, well, a little bigger. If you look on the altar in Radharadana, if you see the small Radha Krishna deities more to the front, bigger, like twice the size, actually. Radha Krishna Prabhupada traveled with them. Yeah. So, one time Prabhupada landed in one city, went to the temple, but then a couple of few hours later, like in the afternoon, he was to drive to the next city where there was some big program. So he was just transiting through this temple in the first city just for a few hours. So his servant unpacked Prabhupada's things and unpacked his own things. And there are a few other members of the party with Prabhupada. They unpacked their things. But the servant left Radha and Krishna packed. They would travel in a suitcase, like, you know, sort of smallish suitcase. So Prabhupada became angry and said, why Why have you not unpacked the deities? And the devotee said that I didn't think it was so rational to unpack them just for a few hours. And Prabhupada said, you are unpacked. You are very comfortable. In other words, Prabhupada really cared about deities. He was very personal because he knew and he saw that this is Radha and Krishna in person. These are not some statues or some symbolic representations just to remind us. This is actually the Lord in person. And he can move, he can act and do and speak and do what he likes, even in the deity form, although generally he remains immobile. But there's so many histories of deities acting and doing things. So Prabhupada really cared about the deities. And we should know also that, like, we got all these pictures around the walls, and we got our nice altar here, and, you know, everything is here, and it's really nice. I know one family, and I haven't visited their house for some years, in Isipingo, Spingo, and in their altar room, their temple room, it's not big like this, it's probably a quarter the size or something like that. You cannot see the walls. There are so many pictures. You cannot see the ceiling. There's so many pictures of Krishna. Anyway, that's just by the way. Here's another story. One young devotee, artist, lady joined the temple in Los Angeles, where the BBT was and still is based, and they produce the books and, you know, organize the book production, and the artists generally live there. So she wanted to paint paintings for the books. So the devotees in charge of the BBT said, okay, do a painting of Krishna and we will show it to Prabhupada, and if he likes it, you can paint for the books. So she painted a painting. But it was a painting of Krishna looking very miserable. Really miserable. Anyway, she painted the painting, and the two BBT devotees, young men, took her in with the painting to meet Prabhupada. And Prabhupada looked at the painting, and he sort of, he shook his head, like, you know, you could see he wasn't impressed. And Prabhupada said, what is this? What is this? And the girl said, Srila Prabhupada, this is Radharani feeling separation from Krishna. And Prabhupada said, this is not what this is Krishna feeling separation from Radharani. And Prabhupada said, this is not what Krishna looks like when he's in separation from Radharani. You've made, when Krishna's in separation, he's in ecstasy. You have made Krishna look like an ordinary boy who has just lost his girlfriend. We cannot use this picture. We cannot use this picture. And this poor young girl, she's just, I don't know, 18 or 20 years old. She started crying. And she really cried, and she just really cried. And the two devotees from the BBT, one was a sannyasi, the other was a brahmachari. and they cannot really touch ladies, like, you know, pick her up and take her out or something. They're saying, ah, come on, let's go. But she's just too upset, just too upset. And Prabhupada's sitting there watching. Then Prabhupada said, let me see that picture again. And Prabhupada looked at the picture again. This time he's nodding. And after, you know, a minute or at least 30 seconds, the girl's kind of a little more peaceful. Prabhupada said, we can use this painting. We can use it. Prabhupada said, we will call this painting Krishna Has a Headache. So Prabhupada, just an amazing personality. I may have mentioned in Sanya that Prabhupada said, one devotee asked Prabhupada, is the spiritual master present in the heart of the disciple? And Prabhupada replied, yes, if you let me enter. If you let me enter. Think about that. And here's a couple of related things Prabhupada said separately. The disciple and spiritual master are never separated, because the spiritual master always keeps company with the disciple as long as the disciple follows strictly the instructions of the spiritual master. If you think of me and work for me, then I am in your heart. If you love somebody, he is in your heart. It is a common thing. Everyone understands it. If I love somebody, then he's also in my heart. So like this, you know, we should try to develop appreciation for Prabhupada, definitely. Like, you know, read the biographies and really try and sort of tune in to what sort of person is Prabhupada. And if we do like that, then more and more we'll feel Prabhupada with us. It's kind of, you know, it's very subtle, it's uncanny, but it's very real. It's very real. So, yeah, Srila Prabhupada and the spiritual master also. Here's another story. Let's see here. What now? Okay. There was one devotee disciple of Prabhupada called Jayananda. It's quite possible that some of you have heard of Jayananda. He was extremely famous. You know, unfortunately he passed away just, I don't know, a year or several months, something like that, before Prabhupada left this world. I think it was 76. So it really was some time ago. But we were in England, and in those days, people didn't get around like they do now, by any means. So to go to America, that was sort of almost unheard of. But we'd heard of Jayananda in London. We'd heard of Jayananda. He was a very prominent and very amazing devotee. So one day, Prabhupada was visiting a temple. Tamal Krishna Goswami was with Prabhupada, and Jayananda Prabhu was also there. and various other devotees. There'd always be an influx when Prabhupada would visit a temple. So Mangalarti, then after Mangalarti, the second initiated devotees would chant Gayatri mantras, and then chant their rounds. But first they chant the Gayatri mantras. So all the second initiated devotees, like Tamar Krishna Goswami and Jayananda and various others, they all sat down together and chanted Gayatri. And Jayananda Prabhu finished in about 1 minute. But it takes 5 minutes. And now, particularly Tamar Krishna Goswami, he was a very sensitive person and very sort of finickety about details and is everything properly done. He was really, it was sometimes very difficult to deal with him because he was so much into detail. So he finished his Gayatri and he was not happy. But Jayananda had disappeared. He was not, because he finished after 1 minute. Off he went. So Jayananda went to see, Tamal Krishna Goswami went to see Prabhupada to complain. So he's just about to walk in, and the devotee, like secretary or guard, stopped him and said, "No, you can't go in." And Tamal Krishna Goswami, normally you wouldn't stop Tamal Krishna Goswami, he asked the guard, "Who's there with Prabhupada?" And the guard said, "Jayananda Prabhu." And Tamal Krishna Goswami asked, "What is Jayananda doing there with Prabhupada?" And the guard said, "Prabhupada is giving him Gayatri, the Gayatri mantras, but he already got them a few years before, and he'd just been chanting them supposedly." So then, eventually, Tamal Krishna Goswami went in, and Jayananda was still there, and he complained to Prabhupada. "Prabhupada, this Jayananda, I hear you have been giving him Gayatri." Prabhupada said, "Yes." And Tamal Krishna Goswami said, "He received Gayatri at the same time as me, 2 years ago. So what is this?" And Jayananda said, "Yes, you know, I'm sorry, I know. But there's a problem. I keep forgetting the mantras. So every few months I come back to Prabhupada and he gives me the mantras again." And Tamal Krishna Goswami, this was too much. He said, "Prabhupada, what sort of Brahmin is he? He can't remember the Gayatri mantras. He's not a Brahmin." A little aggressive tone. And then Prabhupada got really upset with Tamal Krishna Goswami. And he said, "Actually, Jayananda is so sincere. He can chant anything and Krishna will accept it." Yeah. Doesn't mean we can just chant anything, obviously. And it also doesn't really mean that Jayananda could really chant anything. But the point was that Jayananda was super sincere. I'll tell you one last story. Prabhupada was staying in Los Angeles for a while. Every morning he'd give class in Los Angeles. So you've got the altar here, and there's the temple room, you know, fairly substantial. And Prabhupada's Vyasasan is sort of where this big Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Northi Namahata, very beautiful picture is. So Prabhupada would sit there and give class, and when he'd finish the class, he would step off the Vyasasan, turn to the right, and go out through the front door, which is like opposite the altar. So this one devotee decided, I want to have a personal exchange with Prabhupada. So he noted, what route does Prabhupada take when he goes out after class? And he figured it out that Prabhupada almost exactly follows the same route. Sort of like he goes, turns where Rupa Vilas is, and then goes out, straight out. So the devotee positioned himself right where Rupa Vilas is. And he thought, right, when Prabhupada comes after the class, I'm going to be there, and I'm going to say, Jai Prabhupada, right to him. And he'll probably say, Jai to me, and then I'll step aside. So he wanted just to have a simple little exchange like that. So now Prabhupada's giving class, he's in position. He's right there. Yeah, maybe sort of where Bhakti Charan is. And he's right there, the right spot. And sure enough, Prabhupada gets off the Vyasasan. And as usual, he turns to the right and goes right through Rupa Vilas. And the devotee's right there, and Prabhupada's 1.5 meters away, and the devotee is just ready, and Prabhupada turned to the left. Prabhupada turned to the left and went into the kitchen, which was straight over there, right, you know, directly. There's an entrance from the actual temple room. And who was in the kitchen? Jayananda was cooking breakfast for the devotees. He didn't attend the class because he was cooking for the devotees. And Prabhupada saw him, and Prabhupada chose and went into the kitchen. He went to Jayananda. Jayananda didn't come to him. And Prabhupada spent maybe a minute or so speaking to him, and then Prabhupada carried on out through the kitchen. And that devotee, the devotee, when he saw that, he understood, you cannot like artificially create a relationship with Prabhupada. It has to be from the heart. And when it is from the heart, then, well, wonderful things can happen. Instead of you going to Prabhupada, Prabhupada will come to you. Yeah? So, yes, very nice. Okay, we got a few, looks like, a couple of questions here. Two. Lord Shiva and the smoking of marijuana. Which story was that? Was that the Gopeshwar story? No. Who wrote this? No. Oh, you did. What was the basic idea?
How his devotees all on that day, they think that it's the norm to smoke.
All right. Okay. Well, we can address that point. Yeah. that Lord Shiva, it's described in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, when the demigods and the demons churned the milk ocean, and out came all different types of things. And one time, at one point, as they're churning and churning, poison came. Huge, fantastic amount of poison, like practically an ocean of poison. And it was threatening all the living entities. It's like threatening the universe. And the people didn't know what to do. So they called for Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva drank the ocean of poison. Actually drank it, but he held it in his throat. And his throat became blue. And therefore one of his famous names is Nilakanta. Blue-throated, Nila meaning blue, and Kanta meaning throat. Yeah, so he did that, and he was unaffected. And in this story, well, it's actually part of the story of Radharani sort of questioning Krishna. Why? Why do people say Vaishnavanam Yathashambhu? That Lord Shiva's greatest Vaishnava. Why did they say that? Because, you know, he's very strange in many ways. Yeah. And one of the strange things, you know, he's got a snake around his neck. You don't see people with snakes around, I mean, particularly cobras, around their necks. But Krishna said, no, no, it's a Nantashesh. It's a Nantashesh. Great personality. But Radharani said, but he smokes dhaka. How can you say he's a great Vaishnava? He smokes dhaka. And you know what Prabhupada said? You've got to follow the four regulative principles. Lord Shiva wouldn't even get first initiation in this one. He smokes dhaka. No, you gotta stop. And Krishna said, no, 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 you don't understand. He drank an ocean of poison. So he smoked, and nothing happened. It would kill billions. So smoking a little dhaka, it has no effect whatsoever. And Prabhupada made the comment, Prabhupada makes the comment that you get these Shivites, not here, really, but in India, you get these, you know, heavy-duty Shivites, like particularly the Naga Babas, but there are many others too. You may have seen pictures of Naga Babas. They just don't wear anything. Or they have a trident, and they just walk around. And that's what they do. And when they have the Kumbh Mela, on the main bathing days, because it goes for some weeks, and there's some days of the main days, the Naga Babas bathe first. They're allowed to bathe first. So they and there are various other groups of Shivites also, they smoke ganja, loads of it. And they say that they do it because Lord Shiva does it. Lord Shiva, when Radharani asked, why does he smoke ganja? Krishna said, because the people he's preaching to, they're very degraded, very degraded. And they're very attached to intoxication. So if they see he's smoking, then they'll think he's cool. He's like the cool local corner boy who walks around, you know. Walk around. He used to walk around in a bygone age. Yeah, and they will accept him and they'll follow him. So he has to do it. It's not that he wants to, but it's just to impress them. But it has no effect on him whatsoever. So Prabhupada said that all these Nagababas and other types of like radical Shivites, they say they smoke ganja because Lord Shiva did or does. Prabhupada said, all right, that's fine. Prabhupada said, then, first of all, drink an ocean of poison. If you can drink an ocean of poison and survive, then you can smoke ganja. No problem. No problem. Because it won't have any effect. Is that okay? I think the whole story is too long. What inspired me to leave my material life and join an old Indian man to help him start a movement? Well, I tell you what. You know, I was extremely dissatisfied in material life. I was just, you know, I could see that people were wasting their time working. It was just so vividly clear. And people, they're not happy living like this. And I didn't have the answer. What should they do as a positive alternative? But I could just see that what they were doing was just the wrong thing and it was really not working. So I thought, you know, I can't do this. It would be like a display of a lack of integrity if I just do the same thing. So, therefore, well, you know, in those days there was the hippie movement. And I wasn't exactly hippie, although I was sort of, you know, something a bit like that, something like that. But not like a classic hippie. But I stopped working. I retired. I had just turned 21 and I retired. And actually just before that I saw Prabhupada. He came to the university. I was studying philosophy in the university. And it was very impressive, but it didn't really sink in. It was only maybe 6 months, or at the end of that year, 72. That it really started sinking, and I met some devotees and they explained some things to me and it became clear that actually here we have a positive alternative. So then I came to England. It was December 72 and I started visiting the temple, and then I stayed as a guest. I moved in on January the 7th 1972 as a guest, and I'm still there as a guest. Here I am, living proof. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Okay. Hare Krishna. What's next?